Hello,
this is number 0240.
The Stuff File program
with Peter Anthony Holder.
And it comes to you
right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0240. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet business strategist Wesley Chapman, who talks about online rage, the new road rage. It's not just young people who are acting out online.
It isn't just the youth. In fact, the youth are treating this, and the data shows it, that the youth are actually the least of our problems when it comes to some of the social media rage. It really is some of the older population. And there's so many different social impacts. It's just like road rage. You know, there's so many different reasons that somebody has road rage. It's not really one solution to solve it. It's just awareness and figuring out how we can be more transparent about it.
Film expert John DeLeo is back on to talk about whether modern-day films have what it takes to become classics.
Well, the thing about classics and the word in general is that we won't know for a few years. What I mean is, it usually takes, in my opinion, about 20 to 25 years to see how a movie's going to sort of stack up historically. When you look back in the sort of the golden age, so many of the movies that were thought of, say, as the modern classics didn't turn out to be so as time went on.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. He talks about, among other things, the brand new Thunderbolt roller coaster being built at Coney Island.
They're building it. It should be finished by May. And, of course, they're thinking it's going to attract all the roller coaster groupies from all over the world who, you know, kind of go to every new roller coaster that's built that's going to flip you over and everything. I think it would be a wonderful idea for you to seize upon this opportunity to come down to New York. We'll get together. We'll have lunch. We'll go on the roller coaster and throw up.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0240 were nine members of the Holder family. Yolanda, Yvette, Jordan, Ayanna, Meshack, Birdie, Cheryl, Handel, and Jennifer. Thank you all, gang, for doing the guest late on this edition of the Stuff File program. Love you all. A program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Residents of Birmingham, Alabama are demanding that the city revoke the license of a restaurant because it just doesn't live up to its name. Chan Hin Ching, age 52, owns the restaurant, and when a customer complained about finding a cockroach in her egg roll, Ching gave her a refund and then fired a shot at her as she left. That's just the latest, say residents, who have picketed the restaurant with signs such as, "If the food doesn't kill, the owner might." There have been incidents of him raising a bat to people, showing some guy a butcher knife, because he gets complaints all the time, says Councilwoman Sheila Tyson. Ching was charged with attempted murder and paid $100,000 bail and was released and reopened the restaurant. The restaurant's name, by the way, Good Friends Chinese and Seafood. Yeah. Shouldn't you be able to sue a place for false advertising like that? Anyway. It's just a nasty place and it's unacceptable, says City Council President Jonathan Austin. Okay, now here's the mystery to me. All of this drama is going on with bad food and even an attempted murder, and yet he's willing to go back and reopen his restaurant, which means people are still willing to eat there. Hello? I don't get it. Anyway, a taxi driver called the Orland Park, Illinois police after two passengers refused to pay their $83 fare. The driver told officers that the 27-year-old male and the 31-year-old female were drunk and their clothing was strewn throughout the taxi as they had sex in the back seat. Upon reaching their destination, they said they had no money. But, prompted by the presence of police, the newspaper notes, the 27-year-old man used his mother's credit card to pay the debt and then left the woman to find her own way home. Wow. Note to reporters of the newspaper who covered this story, when a 27-year-old pays an $83 cab fare with his mommy's credit card, you shouldn't use the word man in that sentence. Right. And leaving the woman in the cab, by the way, chivalry isn't dead. It's just in a coma. In Agra, India, police say Neelam Sharma's killer entered her house with an accomplice, planning to rob it. They say that he killed her out of fear she'd recognize him, and that he did the same to the dog, which barked. But he ignored the bird, which was silent. After the stabbings, though, Hercule, the parrot, began behaving oddly when Sharma's nephew, Ashutok, visited the house, even screeching when his name came up in conversation. This raised my suspicion, and I informed the police, said Vijay Sharma, the victim's widower. Police say that the nephew has confessed to the killing. Well, glad that he confessed. Now his lawyer won't have to cross-examine the parrot in court. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, it all started when Gulliver Preparatory School in Miami, Florida, declined to renew the contract of its headmaster. Patrick Snay, who is in his mid-60s, filed a claim for age discrimination and for retaliation against his daughter, Dana, who attended the school. The case was settled for $10,000 in back wages, $60,000 for the attorneys, and $80,000 to Snay. And by the way, doesn't Snay sound like the noise you make when you're trying to suppress a sneeze? Anyway, it also included a confidentiality clause forbidding Snay and his wife from disclosing the terms and existence of the agreement. But Snay told his daughter about it. We knew what the restrictions were, yet we needed to tell her something, he said. Mama and Papa Snay won the case against Gulliver, she posted on Facebook. Gulliver is now officially paying for my vacation to Europe this summer. Suck it. The post, seen by Dana's 1,200 Facebook friends, eventually made its way to Gulliver's attorneys, who then notified Snay that he had violated the confidentiality clause and would not be receiving the $80,000. The case is being appealed. Yet another moron, and I'm talking about the daughter here, who believes they can and should say anything they want on social media without the possible chance of repercussion. Well, as for going to Europe this summer, well, suck it. Anyway, let's get to our first guest, which is kind of timely considering the last story we had here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Is social media outrage becoming the new road rage? It seems that crazy maniac behind the wheel is now behind the computer. To talk about this, we're joined by Wes Chapman, a business strategist and humanistic social impact consultant. Hi, Wes.
Hi, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. Right off the bat, before we start, I've got to ask, what exactly is a humanistic social impact consultant?
Great question. I teach businesses how to be human. And what you led in with is something that's a very, very large epidemic, and not just in our country, but in the world and online. And businesses are becoming bullies in a lot of ways, not intentionally, but just in the way that they're communicating with their end user, their potential user, the way that they're treating social media, the way that they are treating their customer service through social media. There's so many different things. It's a new platform. I mean, everybody rages that they're social media expert or they're, you know, whatever it may be. And social media is an infant. It's just learned, you know, it's just getting potty trained. So, I mean, there's really no experts in this industry. We're still figuring it out. There's best guess scenarios. But what I teach businesses how to do is how to really continue to be human in a space that's very dehumanizing.
Well, getting to the issue of the new so-called media outrage or the new road rage, sometimes you get the feeling, okay, well, this might just be young people on Facebook and Twitter, but it's becoming more of a situation even with older folks, is it not?
It is, and what's really interesting, and if you want to see any great example of it at any time, go to ESPN, read an article, and then read the comments. It just is shocking to me, some of the things that come out of people's mouths about something as simple as, you know, a quarterback's knee injury, or, you know, something as simple as a celebrity giving his wife flowers. I mean, whatever it may be, there just seems to be this inherent attraction for people to come in and just, you know, whether you want to call it bullying or rage or whatever it may be. You know, yesterday there was a celebrity who said that they had a bet with a friend and they were looking to get 30,000 new followers by, you know, the end of the day. And if they didn't, you know, this would happen. And it was a funny little thing. And somebody wrote a very racial slur in the Twitter feed comments and attacked the individual out of nowhere. It's just kind of what's the point. But it isn't just the youth. In fact, the youth are treating this, and the data shows it, that the youth are actually the least of our problems when it comes to some of the social media rage. It really is, you know, some of the older population. So, and there's so many different social impacts that it's just like road rage. You know, there's so many different reasons that somebody has road rage. It's not really one solution to solve it. It's just awareness and figuring out how we can be more transparent about it.
The thing about road rage, and to a certain degree also this situation online, is that part of the problem seems to be the feeling that some of the people who are making these comments, some of the people who are acting out both on the road and online, are anonymous. But there are a lot of people who are doing it, and they're not anonymous. So
and the ones that aren't anonymous, you kind of say, what are you doing? But it just comes to the fact of, you know, really understand the social impacts of the evolution that we've gone through. I mean, let's go back to horse and buggy, right? I mean, if you said something to somebody's face in the good old, you know, West, as we call it, odds are if you couldn't back that up or you didn't have a good reason, you're either going to be in a gunfight or you're at least going to be in some kind of a brawl. And then, you know, horses became more readily available and, you know, people could say things and take off on a horse. And then I'll fast forward to cars and people are saying, you know, I'm in a car and I can flip that person off, or I can scream at that person, I can roll down my windows, whatever, and I can speed away. Now you've got the, you know, computer, and you've got people who say, well, I can sit behind my computer, and even if somebody does know me, what are they really going to do? Like, you know, are they going to just, they're going to come and talk to me? They're going to, you know, knock on my door at my home? There's no consequence, I guess you could say, for some of the actions that are happening. And I think that's where the awareness needs to come in, is that people need to, again, be transparent. You can't stop it. People are going to continue to do it. I tell all my clients, every time you make a post, every time you do something, expect this online rage. There's going to be somebody who thinks your idea is stupid, your point is dumb, you know, whatever it may be. And obviously the comments are usually much worse than that. But you just have to continue. But what you don't have to continue is tolerating it. There are features built into social media that can eliminate that, you know, whether it's blocking it, whether it's letting your audience take care of it. You know, there's different strategies on how you can decrease the rage. Just as like in road rage, if somebody flips you off and you flip them off back, what are you doing? Well, you're instigating that rage, and now, you know, you could end up in a high-speed chase. I mean, we've all seen that at some point in our driving career.
We are seeing a situation with these comments online, and you brought up the whole ESPN thing. I mean, I work as a television news anchor, so our television station has a website and Facebook page, and we see the comments there as well. And you look at any media outlet, be it newspaper, television, or radio, that has a comment page, it's quite startling to see what's written after an article goes up online. I've got a chicken or an egg question here, and is part of the problem a lack of civility, and is it born out of the modern social media situation, or the other way around? We see what's happening in the United States between Republicans and Democrats in the Congress and the Senate. They can't get along, and there was a time when people used to get along, and it's not just in the United States, it's happening in other countries as well. And how people feel about politicians and what they say about politicians online. Is it just simply a lack of civility?
You know, that's a deep question, and, you know, and to get a little deep with you in return, it really starts with something as simple as good old-fashioned manners. One of the things that I teach every business that I work with is that you have to understand your social impacts. Your social impacts are things that are out of your control and that are happening in society, and I'm not talking about economics. I'm talking about social development. And when we look at what's happened over the last 50 to 60 years, just particularly in our country here in the United States, with the family unit, with the way that men treat women, with equality, with, you know, all these different things, there are so many changes happening. But one of the core things that's not happening is the, I don't want to call it old-fashioned because it's really not, but it is that philosophy of manners, table manners, men opening doors for women, women, you know, being in the home, having the opportunity to be mothers and being that opportunity. They don't have to have two jobs or they're not single moms. You know, I mean, there's so many social impacts that are happening. And what's so interesting about social media is it's becoming an outlet for some of these issues. It's becoming a place that we're seeing some of this. But let me make it very clear, the data that's happening around the world, you know, this isn't all doom and gloom. The data is startlingly positive. There is more positive happening with the advent of technology, with this movement. It's just different. We're learning what's socially acceptable, what's not acceptable. People are learning how to speak in an environment that they've never spoken in. I mean, it's just, it's evolving, and this is kind of that moment, you know, this is, it's like I said, it's being potty trained, it's kind of figuring its own identity out, and this is the moment as parents, you know, those that use social media, those that control social media, those that have the reach, this is the moment where they're going to shape the future of what this does. And so it's a critical time. The next 3 to 4 years is very critical on how this all happens. You know, people are going to get bored of Facebook, they're going to get bored of Twitter, they're going to get bored of Pinterest, we're going to have new names out there. People are not going to get bored with connecting with other people. And so it's really just that it's a very deep question, but it's a combination of everything. And yes, you could come down and say it's as simple as men don't open doors anymore for women. And that is transparently being, you know, being seen throughout the communication language of the world. I know that's a really, you know, caveman-esque maybe comparison they bring up, but it's so critical to understand just the evolution of society and some of the benefits and some of the negatives that are happening because of it.
Do you think, and you kind of partially answered the question when you started off this last answer, do you think it's a situation where it's going to get better or get worse? Is there light at the end of the tunnel?
I think that you're going to see certain sectors getting better. Again, I think that the younger audience, the 19 to maybe 25 right now, they're kind of tired of, you know, the bullying and the rage and some of the things that are going on social media. So I think that particular pocket is going to be more aware, and they're going to be a lot more quiet and a lot more respectful. They know how to speak their voice in social media. They can still make a point without being obnoxious and ridiculous. So I think that there is some sectors where we're going to see, you know, very positive change, but I also feel that we're going to start seeing a lot more, you know, they always say it's the calm before the storm, and then, you know, the storm brings, you know, beautiful flowers, all that fun stuff. So I think that we are going to see some more rage that we haven't seen before, that bullying is going to get a little bit worse. We're going to see some things happen, and then, you know, it's going to kind of be an aha moment. And I'd say we're kind of in the middle of this right now, so it could go either way. But I think immediately some pockets are going to be much more positive than others, and some are going to be much darker than others.
Well, watching what happens with social media will itself be an interesting social study. Wesley, I thank you very, very much for talking to us. I know people can find more information by going to your website at wesleydchapman.com, correct?
Correct, and it's an honor. I appreciate you guys having me on this morning.
Thanks for being on the program with us.
Have a great day.
Business strategist Wes Chapman. Again, you can check out his website at wesleydchapman.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0240, and you'll find the link to Wes's site.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Coming to you from the outskirts of sanity, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about modern film classics. Plus, we have a visit from Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, who will share a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. And of course, there is indeed an Idiot of the Day coming your way. But right now, we have more Stuff File news for you on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Michael Pristoup, the chief of police in Annapolis, Maryland, is upset that people are making fun of him. It's disheartening to have our chief attack, said a department spokeswoman. When the chief saw a headline that proclaimed marijuana overdoses killed 37 in Colorado on first day of legalization, he relayed the story to the state legislature to urge them not to pass proposed legislation to legalize the drug there. The story Pristoup saw was on a satirical website. There are no confirmed cases of anyone dying from a marijuana overdose, ever, let alone 37 in one day in one state. And they call pot smokers dumb, said one observer. Just think how smart the rest of the force is, said another. Annapolis Mayor Mike Pantelidis says Pistoup's statement was a simple mistake, and the city's reputation won't take a hit, at least long term. Luckily, people that smoke pot, the mayor said, have short-term memory loss. That's an actual quote. Yes, that might be true. Unfortunately, the same can be said for voters. Yeah. Anyway, we have a couple of stories that share a telling tale of the costs of Spain's economic collapse. Here's story number one. London's Daily Mail reported in March that Spain might have as many as 2,900 recently abandoned villages. That's swaths of land with clusters of houses deserted by owners, forced into cities to find work during the current recession, and that speculators were buying entire villages at single house prices and turning them into vacation retreats. And story number two, a formal association of sex workers in Barcelona has introduced a 4-hour introduction to prostitution class for women transitioning from other occupations due to layoffs. Course topics include tax return help, and by the way, prostitution is not legal in Spain, and marketing, as well as sex tricks. For those taking the sex classes, I'm wondering, is there any homework? Anyway, moving right along, Branko Bogdanov, age 58, and his wife, Leila, age 52, and their daughter, Julie, age 34, were arrested in March and charged in a 10-year shoplifting enterprise that was run out of their upscale Northbrook, Illinois home, which they allegedly used as a base while prowling stores in states as far away as Florida, stealing high-end toys and jewelry, which they resold on eBay and to their fences. Police estimate that the family swiped as much as $7 million worth in their forays, many items being stashed in Layla's customized flowing skirts with hidden pockets. You know, there's something to be said for the entrepreneurial spirit and the idea of family businesses. Don't know how the court case will go, but the family that steals together will probably run endless appeals together. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, there are all sorts of fetishes, cross-dressing, role-playing, spanking, even toe-sucking, but most people go to the internet to gratify their fetishes. The man in this story went to his local Walmart, because if you listen to the show on a regular basis, you know that everything happens at Walmart. Police in North Carolina have arrested a man accused of sucking on a woman's toes at a Walmart after convincing her that he was a podiatry student. Now, while I can't condone this kind of assault, you have to appreciate his creativity. Anyway, authorities say Michael Anthony Brown was arrested at his home in Concord. He was turned over to Lincolnton police, where a magistrate set his bond at $50,000 on a charge of assault on a female. Now, according to police, Brown is a registered sex offender. Detective Dennis Harris said the woman agreed to try on several pairs of shoes at the store in Lincolnton. Harris says at some point the man stuck her foot in his mouth. Police say when the woman became upset, the man offered to pay for her groceries. Apparently that didn't persuade her, and she later identified Brown from the store's security tapes. You know, there are some people out there who might hesitate to press charges, albeit briefly, with the promise of a week's worth of groceries, but I digress. Anyway, let's get to our next guest, shall we? Film expert John DeLeo, author of many books, including Screensavers, 40 Remarkable Movies Awaiting Rediscovery, is back on the program to talk about some of the films of today. Are there any future classics among them? That's what we're hoping to find out. John joins us on the line right now from Manhattan. Hi, John.
Hey, it's good to be back with you.
Good to have you back on the program with us once again. So,
thanks.
Are there any modern classics?
Well, the thing about classics and the word in general is that we won't know for a few years. And what I mean is it usually takes, in my opinion, about 20 to 25 years to see how a movie's going to sort of stack up historically. When you look back in the sort of the golden age, so many of the movies that were thought of, say, as the modern classics didn't turn out to be so as time went on. I'm thinking, you know, specifically of so many movies that won the Oscar for Best Picture. Now they look like some, you know, rather odd choices up against some really far greater films that sort of fell by the wayside at the time. But then, of course, time will out, and those are the movies that are regarded as the classics, and some of those Oscar winners, you know, not so much. So, you know, movies from the 30s like the, you know, Universal Horror series or the Fred and Ginger musicals are now much more highly regarded than, again, some of those Best Picture winners like The Great Ziegfeld or Cimarron that are often rather mediocre. So I'd say where we are right now, as I said, 20, 25 years, we've already pretty much, like, I'd say, assessed the 70s as a second golden age of the movies, and there are quite a few classics from that period. So I'd say we're probably figuring out the 80s right now and seeing, you know, in the next few years what will emerge as the ones that have the staying power. I mean, it's fun to guess with the more modern stuff, like the movies of, say, the last 5 years, what will end up being a classic or what will have just been something of the moment that will date and, you know, not quite look so interesting or fascinating, you know, in the near future.
By the way, you forgot one mediocre film that was considered a classic at the time and I don't really think is, and that's The Greatest Show on Earth.
Oh, absolutely. That's a prime example. Yeah. Well, see, you know, talking about the 50s, something like The Greatest Show on Earth or Around the World in 80 Days, some of those spectacles, even Ben-Hur, which is better than the two I mentioned, but, you know, not a masterpiece. A lot of those movies don't hold up as well as some of the films from the 50s that were overlooked at the time, the most obvious ones being, you know, Vertigo, The Searchers, and Singin' in the Rain, probably the three most highly regarded movies of the 1950s in America. Not one of them was even nominated for Best Picture. And even the critical reaction to Vertigo was fairly mixed, and I think The Searchers was considered just another good John Wayne movie at the time. And Singing in the Rain was much less appreciated than the more so-called serious-minded and American in Paris, which had won the Best Picture Oscar. But I can't imagine that anyone today actually thinks American in Paris is better than Singing in the Rain. But you can understand why at the time it was considered more serious because it had a ballet in it, and Singing in the Rain is hilarious, so it, you know, can't be as good.
Also, the other side of the coin is correct as well in the fact that one of the films we consider a classic today wasn't really a box office giant, and that is The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, sure. The Wizard of Oz, and of course It's a Wonderful Life, too, another beloved movie that didn't set the box office on fire. It is hard to believe, and I guess in both cases, it really was television that gave both those movies the status they now hold, those annual viewings that made the whole country sit down and share that experience.
Is it possible that it's more difficult for a film of today to be considered a classic because so much hype comes out around what is essentially a smaller number of films that come out on a yearly basis? A lot is riding on each film, as opposed to back in the day when literally hundreds of movies came out. Some were good, some were bad, but they swam on their own, so to speak, and they weren't carrying a lot of baggage as to what they were expected to do.
Yeah, that's a good point. That may very well be true. It seems like, you know, I think you're right, though, that there are fewer movies made that are at least, you know, even aiming to be, you know, exceptional. So many you feel, you can feel cynical about that they're not even trying to be very good because they're appealing to a market that they think that they don't actually respect, whether it's, you know, little kids or teenage boys or whatever group, with the idiot comedies or the spectacles with action sequences that are incoherent and go on forever. Sometimes you wonder that if they don't really actually think much of the audience they're playing to. And then at the end of the year, they release all the movies, you know, the so-called Oscar movies, with the more serious-minded people making films trying to do something and get recognition, and maybe do something that no one's done before, you know, try to move the medium along a little bit. You know, like I said, it's hard to know. Sometimes movies that are really just intending to be fun and entertaining, you know, will, like the Fred and Ginger movies I mentioned, can end up being the classics, and some of the more sort of prestigious films can look pretentious, and often win the Oscar, back to the Oscar.
Well, looking at more recent history, would you not agree that although we all loved it when it first came out, no one would think it was a classic, but today people are revering films like Animal House and Ghostbusters?
Yeah. See, I don't know if it's because of my age, as, you know, I was already an adult. Well, I guess I was in high school for Animal House, but certainly an adult for Ghostbusters. And it's hard for me to go along with that. I guess maybe if I were a little kid who was raised with those movies, you know, playing all the time and grew up with them, I might have a special fondness for them. And you can put them in a kind of a pop classic category, meaning they don't necessarily have to be very good, but the sort of the culture has embraced them. But I don't remember either one of them being particularly good. I remember seeing them like everybody else. I guess they would, for me, belong in a category of movies like White Christmas that people call a classic, but, you know, it's not a good movie. It never was a good movie, but people, you know, have fond memories of their watching it, whether it was because it was with the whole family or whatever. But, you know, that's a kind of other category of just, you know, being a popular movie that, you know, has hung around.
Okay, so what about tossing in some of the films when we're talking about a younger crowd? Some of the films that, say, John Hughes is famous for, or movies like Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah. Yeah, that actually, those actually might, I guess you could use the term minor classics, which you often hear. Because that was a talented guy, and his movies also, they do belong together in a group. You know, he might not be, you know, as great as Preston Sturges in the 40s, but you can see a kind of thematic connection in terms of a sensibility, and I think, yeah, they may hold up as a group that people will look at, and, you know, have film festivals where they'll show the whole the whole oeuvre of John Hughes. Yeah, that's certainly possible. I would think they would probably be held in more serious regard than, say, Animal House and Ghostbusters.
While you brought up Preston Sturges, and that's a great analogy, I would like to put John Hughes more into the teenage version of Frank Capra.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and, you know, Capra's another interesting one about, you know, in terms of what is a classic, how people can go in and out of favor. Because, you know, like It's a Wonderful Life was not a big hit. Maybe people weren't really in the mood for Frank Capra anymore after the war, when he'd been all the rage in the 30s. And then, you know, he would be derided with, you know, being called Capricorn. And, you know, his last few movies weren't particularly highly regarded. But now enough time has passed, and the really good ones are, you know, I think they're great. I mean, I think It Happened One Night, which is 80 years old now, is as great a comedy as we've ever made in America. It's like the granddaddy of every romantic comedy that's come after in these last 80 years. So, and that one did win Best Picture. So he did make a few, a few masterpieces. And there are some, yes, it's easy to, I guess, make fun of because they are a little icky, corny, and trying a little too hard.
Well,
I'm not a Mr. Smith Goes to Washington fan, but I do love Mr. Deeds Goes to Town and some of the others.
It Happened One Night won the Academy Award, it swept a lot of the awards that night.
Yeah.
And didn't people deride it for, well, how could this be at the time?
Well, the thing with that was, I think mostly it was because it came from Columbia, which was known as Poverty Row. So how did this upstart movie from a studio that was, you know, grade B or less in terms of the industry, you know, take over in one fell swoop? Because, you know, Clark Gable was sent from MGM on loan to do it and didn't want to. So he essentially was being punished to make It Happen One Night. And I think when Claudette Colbert took it, she took it with the agreement that she had to be released after a certain number of weeks because she had other commitments, and she was leaving on a certain day no matter what. So again, it was sort of, it just shows sometimes when people, I guess they're not trying too hard. It was so kind of effortless and done off the cuff. And I don't know, it was just one of those magical things. It's hard to explain when something works so beautifully. But no one could have foreseen any of them winning an award for that kind of movie.
Well, one last question. We've got less than a minute, so I just wanted you to rub up your crystal ball. I'm not going to ask you to name a title of any kind, but I'm going to ask you this question. The possibility of classic films of the future, where do you see them coming from? Major studios or indies?
That's a good question. I guess it's really hard to say. I don't know that there. Gosh, I would like to say that the major studios aren't done yet. I mean, it sometimes looks so bleak when you look at the rosters of what's coming out in the spring and the summer, especially. But I still, you know, I love old Hollywood. I want to believe that the big studios and the big stars aren't done yet, and that there'll be other golden ages from that realm.
Excellent. Well, we love the old movies. We love the new movies. We love your books. We love
your
website, which is screensaversmovies.com. Thank you very much, John, for being on the program with us once again.
My pleasure. Take care.
Film expert John DeLeo. John's website is johndeleo.com, and you'll find his blog at screensaversmovies.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0240, and you'll find the links to both. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. The Girl Scouts have been an important part of communities all across America for more than 100 years. The organization has seen a lot of changes over the past century, but nothing illustrates how much things have changed quite like this next story. The leader of the Girl Scouts in my metropolitan area told me several years ago that they had to sell 32,000 boxes of cookies every year just to raise enough money to pay for liability insurance to protect themselves from lawsuits. That's right, 32,000 boxes, and Girl Scouts in some other cities have had to sell even more boxes than that to cover their own liability. Let's be fair, the Girl Scouts have a lot of company. Such respected organizations as Little League Baseball and the YMCA must also devote substantial portions of their budgets to liability insurance. This is all because lawsuits, unfortunately, have become as much a part of life in America as Girl Scout cookies. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder, but here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And Peter Franklin joins us once again from the mean streets of New York City. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello, live from the streets of New York City.
One of the things that's in the news these days, actually, you can check it on your website at gabby.com, is a situation dealing with insulin users that have to be concerned about the needles they used?
It's, you know, it's Peter. You don't mind if I call you Peter. It's one of the most insane stories I've ever thought to report to you. And as I'm about to tell it to you and your nice listeners, I'm sure people are going to say, ah, come on, the Gabby Cabby must be fooling. This is, couldn't possibly be true. At a New York hospital, they were giving out insulin shots. And it turned out, I mean, just as a matter of course, of, you know, doing business, I guess people showed up to get them or what have you. And hundreds were talking about over a period of time. And it turned out the person who was giving the shots was using the same needle. I mean, you know, it isn't clear whether they were thinking this is a way to save money or was this nurse just so unbelievably stupid or was it a plot to maybe kill everybody? So, of course, now there's an alert out because they don't think that anybody got AIDS, but they may have gotten, you know, one of the hepatitis viruses. So, as I say, even as I'm telling the story now, you know, and then, of course, what are they going to do to the person? Well, I mean, if it turns out to be just unbelievable stupid negligence, I guess they can do something that you do to stupid people. But, you know, it hasn't been ascertained yet whether it's a criminal offense. Now, let me very quickly add a personal note to this. When I was in the United States Army, I had a situation where there was a large group of soldiers who were being checked for HIV. And this was something that the Army does, I think it was like every 60 days when I was in. So it's kind of safe to have sex with a U.S. soldier, maybe. But in any event, so you had like literally hundreds of people in the room. And being a funny guy, when I was in charge of whatever I was in charge of, I had announced to all of the soldiers that were present that because of cost effectiveness and cutting back on money, that I had decided we were going to use only one needle for the testing. And, of course, you can imagine the yells and the gushries and the things that were going on. What, are you kidding? What, are you crazy? And then I said it was just a poor taste joke, people, just a poor taste joke.
Now, I understand in this particular story that they have to alert, like you say, 4,200 patients? That's a lot of patients.
Yeah, well, we got a lot of people in New York, and that just shows you, you know, what the kind of damage that somebody can do. But I mean, you know, you don't even have to have a medical knowledge. I mean, just it's almost like it's in our genes. You know that when a needle is used, it either gets thrown away or it gets put into an autoclave or something or other. So for the people to do this, and as I say, I'll stay as your chief correspondent. I'll stay on the top of the story. I just hope you're not catching anything just because you're talking to me.
Okay. Meanwhile, summer can't be too far away because we're talking about a new roller coaster.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and because it's New York City and because it's Coney Island, it's a big deal, and it's going to flip you over and down and around and everything. Coney Island is that area. It's actually an island, although it's only about 3 feet off the coast. is we have amusement parks. And I think it's probably one of the most, you know, most famous amusement parks in the world, one of the most, certainly. So they're building it. It should be finished by May. And, of course, they're thinking it's going to attract all the roller coaster groupies from all over the world who, you know, kind of go to every new roller coaster that's built that's going to flip you over and everything. I think it would be a wonderful idea for you to seize upon this opportunity to come down to New York. We'll get together. We'll have lunch. We'll go on the roller coaster and throw up.
You got to have one of those Coney Island hot dogs, I guess, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Now, I understand there was a police officer who was asking for some really interesting job incentives from female NYPD recruits.
Yeah, well, if you thought my story about the needles was crazy, this is even crazier. This is a cop, a real policeman, not a make-believe policeman, who was working in the recruiting department of the New York City Police Department. And getting to be a New York City cop is, you know, it's very highly paid. As a matter of fact, as I now announced the salary that the average cop can be making after maybe 12 years or something or other, or your Mounties are going to probably start packing to come down here. It's about $90,000 a year. They're probably the highest paid cops with benefits and everything on the face of the earth. Anyway, this cop was saying to these female applicants that if they would give him sex, it would put them on the fast line, the fast track to get, you know, accepted in the police department, which, you know, is just, I wouldn't even have, even as a joke, I wouldn't have the courage to say that to a lady applying for a job in the police. And so needless to say, he's going to be out of his job. And in theory, he may go to jail, and then he'll be on the other side of the bars. So, you know, now I've told you two stories which will reassure you that the world is filled with crazy people.
Not only would he be on the other side of the bars, he could be also on the other side of unwanted sex.
Yeah, well, that's true, too.
Now, let's talk about trash a little bit, shall we? I understand that there was a computer that was refurbished that has a lot of information on it.
Yeah, well, people think that when you delete something from your computer, it's gone. But it isn't gone. I mean, if you really want it to be gone, you have to use special government-type programs that will really, really erase it. What happens now, and just to keep this lecture here simple, it just kind of gets shifted and overwritten, and it's not gone, okay? So if you're throwing your computer out, you better either wipe that disk really, really clean or smash it into a million pieces if you don't want everybody to see who your girlfriends and your boyfriends are. Well, in this particular situation, the government agency involved threw away a couple of computers, and somebody found them, and somebody looked into them, and they saw, look at this. I got everybody's Social Security number. I got their date of birth. I got their this. I got their that, and everything or other. So luckily, the right person found it, and they were destroyed, but I just called to say, Peter Anthony Holder, computer advisory. Be very careful if you're throwing away your computers or giving them away.
Absolutely. Now, one of the things we haven't talked about in the last little while is information from the back of the hack. What conversations you overhear in the back of your taxi? And one of the big news stories in the last couple of days is, of course, that unfortunate, deadly explosion in East Harlem, where several people were killed after a gas explosion destroyed an apartment. What are people saying about that in the back of your cab?
Okay, I have to first give a little lecture about how rent works in New York City. There's two types of apartments you can get in New York City. Apartments in a building that were built prior to World War II. That means prior to the 1950s, let's say. And that's controlled by the city. The city determines how much rent you're going to pay. Any building built after that point is free market. The landlords can charge anything you want. So if you were moving to New York City, you would be looking for a rent-stabilized, rent-controlled apartment because then you know it has sort of like a fixed increase. Whereas if you're moving in a regular building or a non-controlled building, you could be paying $2,000 a month rent, and when it's time for a new lease, the landlord could make it $4,000. So it's a very critical thing. The landlords are not happy with that law. Well, but the reason we have the law is because there's more tenant voters than there are landlord voters, and the politicians are smart enough to keep people happy. Well, one of the theories which the immediate cynical New Yorker will come up with is the land, because that was a rent-stabilized, rent-controlled building, is that was done intentionally by the landlord to get rid of the tenants. Now, he may have not meant to kill them, but he may have meant to knock down the building or damage the building so that all the tenants would have to leave. He could then rebuild the building and then charge anything he wants for the rent. Now, remember, to make it perfectly clear, I'm not accusing that particular landlord in this particular case, but it's something that landlords in New York City have done before. And I can assure you, in addition to looking to put the blame on Con Edison, which is the utility company, and the reason they want to put the blame on the utility company is, after all, they're the ones that got all the money if you're going to sue somebody. I can guarantee you they're looking at the landlord's income tax returns and expenses and what have you to see whether or not he was a party to this. But again, to repeat, because I don't want to get myself in trouble, I don't want to get you in trouble, I'm not accusing this particular landlord of it, but it's a topic of conversation which New Yorkers are discussing right now.
You know, speaking of your cab and listening to what's going on in the back, with YouTube and whatnot, have you thought of putting a GoPro camera in your cab? That's all the rage these days.
No, not at all. I think it's silly, and I think these shows, I think they had one on HBO where they're taping people. I think what they really do is it's a lot of fakery. You know, it's real life and that kind of a thing. No, no. And I'm talking to people or overhearing people. I get a lot of information. I don't discuss that I may be talking about them subsequently on the radio. But at the same time, you know, listen, all they're in the cab for is a ride. I can't intrude into their life too much.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't say you'd do it surreptitiously. They would know. Just saying, you know, while you're here, there's a camera. Anyway, besides that, one last thing I want to mention. Celebrity sighting before we let you go. You always see celebrities?
Well, I saw Sylvester Stallone. And then I subsequently found out why I saw Sylvester Stallone in Times Square is because he was making an appearance on The Letterman Show, which I do not watch because I do not like Davey. But be that as that may, Stallone looked very old. He really did. He looked in very good shape. He was very personable to the people that were recognizing him. Hello, very nice. I've never met the guy before. I think in real life, he's probably very nice and very pleasant. But you can't imagine how much I was busting to walk up to him and say, you know, I can take you.
Yeah, he's probably also in town because the new Broadway show, you know, Das Rocky.
Is there anything that you don't know about? See, I could have almost predicted you'd be able to. I mean, here I am, the chief correspondent, and you're telling me stuff about New York. Unbelievable.
Well, there you go. Always a pleasure to have you on the program, sir. People can find more information by going to your website, which is www.gabby.com. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about a racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do, of course, do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way in just a matter of moments here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. But I got one more Stuff File story that I want to share with you before we get to the idiot. Christopher Fulton turned himself in Midwest City, Oklahoma, in March after seeing a surveillance photo of a robbery at the IBC Bank. He told police he indeed must be the robber, that he saw his body in the bank photo, although he insisted that his mind had no recollection of it. Police were about to arrest Fulton anyway. That's because the robber's holdup note was written on a blank check with the account holder's name and address, which was Fulton's mom's, scratched out, except that police lab technology easily can read through the scratch out. So they had him dead to rights anyway, even if he didn't turn himself in. Now, you're probably thinking, okay, this guy was desperately close to becoming the idiot of the day. But I didn't make him idiot of the day. He's kind of an idiot. So I put him what I like to call idiot adjacent, which means this next story is indeed the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff Off presents the idiot of the day.
After an assault report, police in Livingston, Texas, arrested Paul Lee DeWalt Jr., age 43. "We are very familiar with him," said Lieutenant Matt Parrish. "DeWalt has several other assaults pending against him, 6 in the past 2 years. Knowing he was headed for jail, DeWalt wanted to take something along. Hold on a second," he allegedly told officers. "I need to get my crack pipe." Once he realized that was a bad move, DeWalt allegedly tried to destroy it and fought off officers attempting to grab it first. In addition to aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, he was charged with tampering with physical evidence, possession of drug paraphernalia, and resisting arrest. Okay, so you know you're going to jail because you keep assaulting people, and the cops are there to take you in. Yet you decide to tell them to hold on a second so you can find your crack pipe to take with you. Now, what kind of person does something like that? Well, one kind and one kind only. An idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0240. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0240. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. A tape of the preceding program will be sent to the Radio Hall of Fame, where it will be placed under the statue of Marconi, which is kind of wobbly.